Alright, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado Tim Cal.
And Psychic Tom Padgett, raring to go.
And, lots of news this week, lots of back and forth between the UFC and this new fighters organization, and a lot of people freaking out that GSP being involved means he might never fight in the UFC again, and he says, no, that's not true. Also, as I mentioned last week, a lot of criticism about Bjorn Rebney, as Dana White calls him, Bjork. You know, being a promoter and fighting, you know, ridiculously for Eddie Alvarez's contract and stuff like that. How's he going to represent fighters well? So Dana White came out and said, you know, everybody's, all these guys are just trying to make money. That's basically the deal. They're trying to make money off you. But there's some interesting stuff going on behind the scenes. And I actually got Dana White on the phone this morning, believe it or not. That's what he said about Bjorn. Come on, play.
Me in your corner, or somebody else that knows nothing.
One of my favorite Dana White clips.
You might as well have me in your corner, or somebody else that knows nothing.
You might as well have me in your corner or somebody else who knows nothing.
Yeah, that was classic.
He actually said this in the, what was it, Ultimate Fighter Show. That's basically what he said about Bjorn Rebney. And it's interesting that, you know, he's the ex-guy from Bellator coming in to this organization, and it's all UFC guys. And what I don't understand is how quickly all these organizations have since come out since the ownership changed, and how so many of them are just concentrating solely on the UFC. That's it. They don't want to do anything else with MMA, it seems. Which is kind of shady to me. I mean, what about all the other organizations? You think they're spotless?
Yeah, good point.
And you're limiting yourself, too, to just those guys. What if, you know, you end up split between four different organizations? How are you really going to organize? So, I don't know. It's an experiment right now. We'll see if it works. Anyway, we had a lot of fights over the weekend to go over. I feel bad for poor Simon Peter. I got an email. Simon Peter lost to Kubrat Pulev. And I'm like, all right, somebody made a mistake because I think that's supposed to be Samuel. And let's see.
Got a name change, huh?
I looked at the article and poor Simon Peter was in the headline like that, but in the article they called him Samuel, his right name. But did not have a good trip there with Kubrat Pulev. Pulev is talking about trying to unify some titles at heavyweight now.
Did he get KO'd or did it go the distance?
I believe he got KO'd.
Oh, ugly.
Hence why they didn't take the time to get his proper name for that line.
Simon, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know you lost bad when they call you the wrong name in the headline.
Yeah, I didn't even know his name.
Oh,
hopefully, they interviewed him afterwards. He knew where he was at.
Yeah.
He wasn't in Pittsburgh and it wasn't raining.
Anyway. Well, you had a big event, Bellator 166, last Friday. It was a pretty crazy card. Main event there was Eduardo Dantas versus Joe Warren, and you got to give Joe Warren credit for heart more than anything, but just unbelievable courage to stand in there and just take Eduardo Dantas' stiff jab right to the face so many times, and just kept trying to come at him at a different angle and work something in, and ended up being a majority decision win for Eduardo, and he goes to 19-4, and it was a rematch of a fight that Joe had won, so.
Yeah, and you gotta wonder, again, getting on our favorite topic, our weekly topic here about the judges, you gotta wonder about the judge had, I think one judge had it even, if I remember right. Did you see the fight, Rich?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did you score the fight even?
No.
No, okay. Thank you. That was just, it just shows how, that old cliche that there's so many ways to lose, but there's so many ways to improve. I mean, this was like a different competition from just a brief 2 years ago.
Well, I mean, as they say, the sport evolves, and I think what you're seeing now with a lot of these fighters, like Dominic Cruz, Tony Ferguson, they have a style of movement. They use the entire cage. They move their head a lot, and they have a hands-down approach to boxing, stand-up, and it's just... It's interesting to see that this is like, you know, developing from a striker's game to a Playboy Floyd Mayweather type offense defense mix on the feet, and these guys are getting away with it, and they've got their own little style to it, and Eduardo's one of those guys who can just sit there and jab you six times, and then when you try to punch back, his head is way back towards the fence.
Well, I mean, doesn't that remind us of former heavyweight champ named Muhammad Ali?
Yeah.
when he first came around, I mean, the media was just, oh, this guy's breaking every rule. Wait till he moves up. Someone's going to tear his head off. But never worked like that. He was able to make that style work.
But I love watching Joe fight. I just hate watching him, you know, lose badly like that. And yeah.
I'd have to think he's done. I mean, maybe he can keep going, but
I
don't see him being the champ ever again as long as this guy's around.
He might be done on his title run, but he's got to have a better performance to go out on. I'm guaranteeing you they're going to give him somebody that will be a better matchup for him next fight, and that might be his last one. But yeah, I'm thinking his title hopes are probably done for now.
Well, you remember, he's 40 years old, and again, what do we know about the lighter weight divisions? It's based on speed and reflexes a lot more than the big boys. I think a 40-year-old at 135 is a lot different than a 40-year-old 100 pounds heavier.
Yep. And we had a unanimous decision in the co-main event, A.J. McKee and Ray Wood. Ray Wood is a guy from New England Fighting Circles, same division of fighting I got involved with up in there in Maine. Ray Wood had a hell of a performance up to the unanimous decision for his opponent. He definitely hung in there as long as he could, and had a good early effort. But we had Marcos Galvo beat LC Davis by split decision. Chris Honeycutt beat Ben Ryder by unanimous decision. Gregory Babin beat Emilio Sordi by guillotine submission choke. Won in the first round, 3 minutes and 11 seconds in. And we'll go through the rest of the other ones. But we also, as I mentioned, had the big Ultimate Fighter finale. And Henry Cejudo versus Joseph Benavidez. It was an interesting battle there. Very interesting. I think Cejudo's little low blow incident was just very unfortunate for him. But he is now blaming it on why he lost the fight and thinks there should be an immediate rematch and blah, blah, blah. But.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty quick taking a point that quick. I mean, I don't even remember him getting a warning on that. That I thought was a little uncalled for.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with that, but I should have it in front of me. Anyway, the main event there, we had Elliot, Tim Elliot versus Demetrius Mighty Mouse. And that was actually one of his toughest tests in a long time. The guy came through Ultimate Fighter, and actually, he had fought him before, I think, right?
I don't think they'd fought before.
Well, he hadn't fought before, but anyway, he was in the UFC before.
I gave Elliott the first round, and I thought, well, maybe we're going to have a fight, and it kind of just got into a pattern. And I'll tell you, though, Elliott sure was the sentimental favorite.
Right.
And poor Johnson, boy, he just can't catch a break from the crowd, you know? I mean, the guy does everything. He's polite. He doesn't talk trash. He's always in shape. There's never any scandals. And yet he can't catch a break from the fans. That's just got to be exasperating for him because he's just so good at that weight division. I don't know if he's going to move up or what he's going to do, but it's hard for him to get any competition there.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think he minds.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's making money, but I think he could probably do better, I think, with a little more competitive matchups because there's so much talk about him not really ever main being the headline on a pay-per-view. It is what it is.
He said he'd fight Conor McGregor next week at 170 pounds. No.
Yeah.
Good luck, Mighty Mouse. Yeah. Anyway. Conor McGregor news, too. Conor McGregor is going to be in Game of Thrones. But I've watched it. I got sucked into it. So, 2 more seasons left, and at some point they're going to try to bring Conor McGregor into it, which doesn't surprise me with the Hollywood connections to the UFC.
Well, he was training with that big 400-pound strongman guy. Well, I don't know if they were training together. I guess the guy was in the gym with Conor.
The Mountain.
Yeah, I guess that's... I have season one. I haven't started watching it yet because when I start these things, I tend to get addicted to them. So
Tom, let me tell you how it ends. No, just kidding.
Well, it wouldn't make any difference. I won one ear and out the other.
Everybody dies! No. Yeah, that's it's kind of the theme of Game of Thrones. Get used to it. Everybody dies. Stuff. Anyway, so we got a lot of fights this weekend. A lot of fights happened last weekend, but yeah, it's one of the stories. Tom sent me a link about Chuck Liddell got fired. Poor guy. And Matt Hughes, as you might remember if you listened to us when we interviewed Dana White's mother. Matt Hughes, not the nicest guy in the world, but Dana White's good buddy, got fired, both of them, from the UFC. Cutbacks, you know? And it's not so much that they got fired that entertains me about this article. It's Dana White's explanation as to why they got fired. This is classic.
Well, I kind of get the feeling that they were hired for... mainly for nostalgia and sympathy out of nothing else. I mean, I don't know what their official function was, but I sort of get the feeling these new guys just came in and just opened up the books and said, what's this, what's this, what's this, and I don't think they liked the answer they got.
Yeah, and this article says, when another company takes over another company, it's absolutely normal for them to come in, and especially at the executive level, if guys go at the executive level, they have guys they are going to bring in that will fill those positions, and some of these people that they've been letting go that work for the UFC already have people. They already have people to fill those roles. They have their own people, so it's their company. They roll in and they put their own people in these positions. That's absolutely normal. A lot of our executives were let go. That is absolutely normal. They're going to come in and they're going to put their own people in these positions, especially a company as big as WME IMG. They already have a ton of people for these positions. So,
I wonder what do they mean by these positions? What were those positions? I have no idea what those guys were doing.
Well, just join the club.
Yeah, they act like it's some big executive position or something like that. I kind of get the feeling it wasn't that.
All right, well, I haven't even got to the good part of the article. The best Dana White quotes here. They saved for the end. And here's a good one. This is, quote, Dana White says, the Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes thing, those were my guys. During the Zuffa era, those were my guys, and I wanted them to retire. I respected these guys. They helped build the company when I was growing it. And I told them both, I said, listen, unless I drop dead, or this is the key clause, or it comes to a position sometime where I'm not controlling how much money is being spent or all that stuff, you guys will get a paycheck until that day. That day came. Says what? That day came. And then here's the best part. Best part at the end. Dana says, the thing with Chuck and Matt, it was a loyalty thing for me. It was my gift to them for being the guys that they were when me, Frank, and Lorenzo, when it was our money. Our money. Oh, somebody else's money. And so the new management says, yeah, Chuck and Matt, go get a job. We don't need you.
Well, I'm sure their services could be used at a lot of gyms if they want to be trainers.
Yeah.
Or Hughes could go back to the farm.
That's the farm.
That's what he was doing before the fighting started. I don't know what Chuck will do if he doesn't stay involved in the fight game. If I remember right, Liddell has a degree in accounting.
Yeah. I believe it.
So it's... if his fists don't kill you, his tax returns will, huh?
And then the other article Tom sent me, Dana White revealed that Chris Cyborg Santos was offered 245-pound title fights, but said no to them both. That's an interesting one. I'm pretty sure she just wants a Ronda Rousey fight. That's really all she wants.
Hey, again, I just can't help but scratch my head and wonder, how do you get so above your fighting weight that you can't make weight in 8 weeks?
Yeah.
And it happens. I've seen worse.
Yes. Yes. And I don't. I was just, as I read the article, I'm looking at that, and she said she almost died making weight, and she can't possibly make 140 again, and she blamed it on her nutritionist. I can't believe I'm seeing this. Well, I don't know. Just everything's different now.
Yes.
But I just never, in the old days, remember guys ballooning up to, unless your name was Roberto Duran, okay? Now, he'd go to 200 between fights. But for the most part, no, you're not supposed to get that far, that far out and that far off your weight that you can't make it in 8 weeks. What the hell? So, I don't know where that's going with her.
We shall see. Doesn't help.
Because the women's division is just, there's just not that many of them, and they're gonna set up a division around Cyborg, and if she doesn't want to make 145, I don't know what they're gonna do. It's be interesting.
Last week and coming up this week. Tons of boxing stuff to talk about in addition to other UFC events going on, I believe, on Saturday. Same day stuff, I think. I don't know. Maybe Friday and Saturday for the UFC, but I think it's just Saturday this time for Bellator, which is kind of crazy. They've been doing a lot of competing events lately. But we had, as I said, the big fight with Samuel Peter, and got some other results from last week. Go over real quick as I find them on a box rec. Alright. Dennis Shafikov beat Richard Comey, who was 24-1. Comey Shafikov was 37-2-1 in lightweight. Big fight over there in Moscow. Moscow, Russia. And, let's see. That was last week. Also had Abraham Lopez at featherweight. Stayed unbeaten at his weight. Featherweight over Sergio Lopez, 21-11-1. Abraham, 21-0-1. Also, Oscar Negrete. Stayed undefeated 14-0 against Raul Hidalgo, 26-14, out there in Los Angeles. Ashley Theophane beat Yakubu Amadou as well. 39-7 is Ashley's record with just one draw. Yakubu Amadou, 21-8-2. And down there in Tony's neck of the woods, Tevin Farmer got his NABF Super Featherweight title over Darden Zanunaj. 12-2. Tevin is 23-4-1. And cruiserweight Garrett Wilson won his fight over Lamont Capers.
Said it was a tough fight, but he, you know, he did well. You know, he had some struggles in there, but, you know, workmanlike decision for Garrett. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to go. I've been working so much lately, but I did follow the updates.
We also had a couple of our former guests, as I mentioned last week in the schedule for boxing, on the same card, co-main event and main event, Shelly Vincent and Toka Khan Clary. Both super featherweights, but obviously Shelly's female, Toka male, well, maybe not so obvious, I don't know. But both pretty similar records. Toka came in at 19-1. He beat Mario Antonio Macias, 28-20 was his record. Knocked him out. I didn't say what round there. But and then Shelly got a unanimous decision over Marquita Lee. She came in with an 18-1 record there. And also Ray Oliveira got a win over Matt Probin. Ray is 5-0. Oliveira Jr., I believe. Matt Probin is 2-1. That's it for that day. We got another day from last weekend with some fights. This is Friday. We're going to come into some last week fights after we get through this list. But we got to start the upcoming schedule down under in New South Wales, Australia. And the main event there is a pretty interesting fight for the vacant Australian super lightweight title. And speaking of down under, before we even get to this, did you guys happen to see the thing I posted on Facebook with the kangaroo?
Oh, the guy that punched the kangaroo, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, especially being dog people, you know, I think we would all appreciate that one. And it actually is a viral thing, so, I mean, a lot of people have seen it around the world, but this guy had a kangaroo that was choking his dog, basically. And he goes...
Yeah, he
goes out there, and he confronts it, and, you know, just kind of lets it know he's there, and that kangaroo turns to him, and he's just like, all right, you know, now I'm ready, this is my element, you know, he bounces and everything. Guy pops him once in the jaw, and he just, like, looked at him like, all right, well, yeah, I maybe not. Maybe I'm good with that approach, and I'm going now. It was so funny. I mean, the guy just hit him just right. I bounced back, and he was like, all right, and I faced right off with him, and pop, one punch to the jaw. This guy's about as tall as me. He looks fit. Yeah. No 12 rounds of me today. I'm not fighting at the circus. You're getting treats afterwards, so I'm out of here. So now he's the embarrassment for kangaroos everywhere. He's a bounty on his head. Anyway.
Did he have it coming?
I think he was interviewed afterwards. He said he was just trying to pet the dog, but he's trying to choke it. No, anyway, so
just a misunderstanding. Yes, all that yes. Anti-kangaroo bias.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Anyway, down in New South Wales, Australia, we got Kai McKenzie in the main event. He's 15-1, fighting Dylan Emery, who's 17-0. Super lightweights for the vacant Australian super lightweight title. And Tommy Brown, good Australian name, in the co-main event at super welterweight. Tommy Brown is 32-6-1, fighting Samuel Columban, who is 24-9. And that's not for any title. Nothing else too crazy on that one. But then we go to Belarus. We got a big one in Belarus, super welterweight main event there. Sergey Rebchenko, 27-2, and Robizon Omsarashvili, who is 25-13-3. It's the main event. That's pretty, I think, pretty much it on Friday night. On that page, anyway. Lots of names I can't pronounce. No. It's actually a big card Friday night in Sweden. The Swedish Pro Boxing Commission. Light heavyweights. Lots of light heavyweights. Main event and co-main event. And yeah, speaking of names I can't pronounce. The third fight of the night. Just lots of tough ones there. But main event is Erik Skoglund. 25-0. Fighting Timmy Shayla, who is 21-1-1. It's for the vacant WBA International Light Heavyweight title. And the co-main event is Light Heavyweight's Name Turbunja, who is 10-1. And Sven Fornling, who is 10-1 as well. And again, I'm going to say it. Block your ears, kids. Fuck you, BoxRec, for not listing their knockouts.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I like to read their knockouts, but hey, I'm on a big schedule here, so I can't see their knockouts. Third fight of the night, super welterweight, Michaela Lawrence. I guess she's 27-4, fighting Sylvia Zebados. SZ's in there. She is 14-7. And there's Patricia and Monica fighting, and Hampus. I never heard her first name of Hampus. What's up, Hampus? It's a tough one. So that's in Sweden. The Swedish bikini team will be doing the round card girl thing. No. We should help if you're in the audience. Alright, let's see what else we got going on. It's a Saturday. We got some fights going on Saturday. We got a heavyweight fight going on Saturday, I believe. Heavyweight fight in the UK. But also on Saturday in Germany, we got a couple of big boy fights, middleweights and cruiserweights. Cruiserweights, Rene Huebner, he is 42-19-2, fighting Ruben Angel Mino, who is 33-4-1, for the Interim Global Boxing Council cruiserweight title. And then Ronnie Gable is fighting Gabor G. Farkas. And Gable is 21-5-1. Farkas is 15-11-2 for the vacant Global Boxing Council middleweight title. The line there. And we haven't got the Jesus fight of the week. We got Elvis fight of the week. Something like this.
All right.
Heavyweight Elvis Hatimi, 6-0, fighting Ivan Sakic, who is 1-13. 1-13. Won his debut, and well,
that's another one of those. I'd hate to be that one.
Yeah.
I'd be looking in the mirror thinking, yep, maybe it's time to do something else.
Maybe. All right, and Tony's favorite country, except for the U.S., Italy, Saturday. Lightweights.
My hometown.
Lightweights, intercontinental lightweight title for the WBA on the line. Emiliano Masili, 33-0-1, fighting Aristides Perez, who is 29-8-2 in the main event. And then we got the vacant Italy super bantamweight title on the line between Luca Rigoldi, who is 11-1-1, and Luliano Gallo, who is 6-1. Italy. Let's see. And, another one down under, but a different area of down under, New Zealand. A big heavyweight fight. Joseph Parker versus Andy Ruiz. Somebody's O has got to go there. And this one's going to be on HBO. Heavyweight, Joseph Parker. He is 21-0. Andy Ruiz Jr. is 29-0. And it's for the vacant WBO World Heavyweight title.
Seems like Ruiz has been around for forever. He just never has taken that next step. This could, you never know. This could be a shot at it, making the next step, the big transition, the jump.
his title on the line, and big fight for New Zealand, big fight for HBO. Also, super bantamweight fight is the co-main event. I love this guy's name, Isaac Dogbo. Like Dogbone without the N. And he is 15-0, fighting Julian Evaristo Aristule, who is 32-6. And it's for the WBO Latino Super Bantamweight title and the vacant WBO International Super Bantamweight title. Then we got welterweights Jeff Horn, 15-0-1, and Ali Funika, who is 39-5-3. That one's for the WBO Intercontinental welterweight title. And then Super Bantamweights Shannon O'Connell, 14-4-1, and Laura Soledad Griffa, 13-0. And then, that isn't enough. Big fights. We've also got cruiserweights in Poland fighting. Krzysztof Wlodarczyk, 51-3-1 at cruiserweight. Wow. Fighting Leon Harth, who is 14-1. That's for the IBF Intercontinental Cruiserweight title. Co-main event there is a couple of undefeated guys. Michael Cieslak, who is 14-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Nikodem Jezuski, who is 12-0-1. Jezuski. All right. And over in Puerto Rico on Saturday, we got the vacant WBO World Female Featherweight title on the line between Cindy Serrano. Had her sister on the show, Amanda. Cindy is 24-5-3. She's fighting Calixta Salgado, who is 15-7-3 there in Puerto Rico. She's in the co-main event there. I know I'm missing one. At least one big fight, and it's over in the UK. Over in the UK, and he managed to keep the opponents off this card. The most losses anybody has is 21. Old Harry Matthews, 14-21-2. Fighting Marcus Morrison, who's 13-0, second fight of the night. But the big fight on this card at the Manchester Arena is Anthony Joshua fighting Eric Molina for the IBF World Heavyweight title, and Anthony comes in at 17-0. Eric comes in at 25-3. And it's a big deal.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be more like a showcase fight for Joshua. I don't think Molina has, you know, the skills, the conditioning, and the durability to stand up to Joshua, who's just, you know, really coming on like gangbuster.
I don't think so either, but you never know. You never know. Title on.
Oh, you never know. We'll see. That's why they fight.
We'll see. And it's obviously in Anthony's backyard, so he's in the main event. Big deal for him. Big fight for him. Big opportunity for him. Co-main event's pretty good too. Khalid Yafai comes in undefeated at 20-0, fighting Luis Concepcion, who is 35-4. For the WBA World Super Flyweight title. It's a Super Fly. And then we go back to heavyweights. Dylan White, 19-1, and Derek Chisora, 26-6. And also light heavyweights, Hosea Burton, 18-0, and Frank Buglioni, 18-2-1. Fighting for the BBB of C, British light heavyweight title. And then, if that's not enough, we got two other super fights. Callum Smith, 21-0, and Luke Blackledge, 22-2-2. Two's a wild for the BBB of C, British Super Middleweight title. And, again, I don't know the knockouts. Featherweight Scott Quigg also fighting Jose Cayetano. Quigg is 31-1-2, and Cayetano is 20-4. It's for the vacant WBA International Featherweight title. Would you like any other big fights, sir? Can't happen. That's it. That's a big card over there in the UK. I believe that's going to be the Showtime card of the week. What else we got? What else is going on? Oh, Saturday in California. This is going to be a Showtime card. Jermell Charlo fighting Julian Williams for the IBF.
Good point. I've covered Williams a few times.
IBF World Super Welterweight title. And, obviously, this has to be the Jesus Fight of the Week for the WBA World Featherweight title. Jesus Andres Queller, 28-1, fighting Abner Mares, who's 29-2-1. And somebody's always got to go in the main event. Charlo comes in 24-0, Williams 22-0-1 for the IBF World Super Welterweight title. So, two titles there. And Sergey Lipinets, 10-0, fighting Leonardo Zepavigna, who's 35-2 there. Hasn't lost in a while. Hugo Centeno Jr. at super middleweight, 24-1, fighting Ronald Montes, who's 17-4. Middleweight Erickson Lubin, undefeated at 16-0, fighting Juan Ubaldo Cabrera, who's 23-1. Oh, Mario Barrios, 16-0, fighting Claudio Rosendo Tapia, who's 28-17-4. Josecito Lopez, 33-7, fighting Todd Manuel, who's 12-11-1. And the first fight of the night, Aiden Mares, 14-1-3, fighting Vincy Dixon, who's 7-15-1. Crazy stuff. And we're not done. We got another HBO card. Bob Arum, Top Rank, putting on a big one. Terrence Crawford versus John Molina Jr. It's also Saturday night. Co-main event, Mason Menard versus Raimundo Beltran at lightweight. Main event, super lightweights. Terrence Crawford comes in 29-0. John Molina Jr., 29-6-0. That's for the WBC World Super Lightweight title and the WBO World Super Lightweight title. And co-main event is for the vacant NABF lightweight title and the WBO NABO lightweight title. That one's between Mason Menard, who's 32-1, and Raimundo Beltran, who's 31-7-1. So, lots of big, big fights going on. Almost too many to mention. Super middleweight female fight, too, on Saturday. Tori Nelson against Alicia Napoleon. Nelson is 15-0-3, and Napoleon is 7-0. It's for the vacant Universal Boxing Federation World Female Super Middleweight title and the vacant Women's International Boxing Association World Super Middleweight title. Also, Super Flyweights Jose Alfredo Rodriguez, 31-4-0, and Edwin Rodriguez, who is 8-3, fighting for the vacant Universal Boxing Federation All America Super Flyweight title. It's in Virginia. Crap. I feel like I have to be the Micro Machines guy to get through this show tonight. Just the boxing schedule alone. We've also got fights in Bethlehem. It's a good time of the year for fights in Bethlehem. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Welterweights. Main event there is for the WBC Latino welterweight title. David Emmanuel Peralta, 26-2-1, fighting Berlin Abreu, who's 13-1. Co-main event there is super middleweight Ronald Ellis, 12-0-1, fighting Oscar Rojas, who's 10-6-1. And then we got welterweights Kermit Cintron, 38-5-2, fighting Rosenberg Gomez, who's 19-5-1. Good stuff there. All right. Week's schedule. So I guess that was it for this week. Finally got to the end of the big fights this week. Last week, as I mentioned, RTD, what does that mean? Referee terminates?
Like retired.
Retired.
It basically means retired.
Oh, yeah.
Like the player retired from the stool.
Quit on a stool. That's exactly what happened. Kubrat Pulev, 23-1, beats Samuel Peter, 36-5, for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Heavyweight title. Samuel did quit after whatever.
Did he retire from the stool?
That's what he said. And I believe they gave him a special steak at the hotel the night before. It was in Sofia, Bulgaria. No. Who knows? Kubrat Pulev, yeah, got the win. Co-main event was heavyweight Otto Wallen winning over Rafael Zambano Love. Wallen's undefeated, 16-0. Love, 39-13-1. And the vacant WBO Asia Pacific light heavyweight title, Dmitry Sukotsky, lost to Steve Giffard. Sukotsky came in at 23-4, Giffard 15-2. That was last week. Remember, we talked about Holyfield last week because of Sherman Williams in action in Denmark. Sherman won his heavyweight fight over Mateus Roberto Osorio, 9-2. He improves 38-15-2 is his record. Good stuff there. And the main event there was Lolenga Mock, 37-14-1. Coming in and beating Ruben Eduardo Acosta, 32-14. Also had fights in more fights in Moscow. Cruiserweight Denis Lebedev, 29-2-0, lost to Murat Gassiev, stayed undefeated, 23-0, for the IBF World Cruiserweight title. Super lightweight Edward Troyanovsky, 25-0, lost to Julius Ndongo, who's 20-0. That was for the IBF World Super Lightweight title and the International Boxing Organization World Super Lightweight title. And we had Priska Vykot, 6-3, fighting Svetlana Kulikova for the vacant International Boxing Organization World Female Super Lightweight title. And Svetlana won that one. And finally, the vacant WBC Silver Cruiserweight title was on the line between Dmitry Kudryashov, 19-1, and Santander Stilgado, 27-3. And Dmitry got that one by knockout. They even had fights in Samoa last week. Samoa. All right, what else do we have going on? Billy Joe Saunders got a big win over Artur Akhavov, 16-1 in Scotland last weekend. Billy Joe improves to 24-0. It's for the WBO World Middleweight title there. And then Jack Catterall stayed undefeated. Goes to 17-0 over Diego Gonzalo Luque, who is 24-1. That was for the WBO Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. Scotland. And down in Tennessee, we had a bunch of little obscure titles. I'm not even going to go through all these. Tennessee heavyweights Alonzo Butler, 31-3-1, had a draw against Fred Latham, 9-0-1. That was for a bunch of vacant Tennessee and Universal Boxing Federation and USNBC and all kinds of titles. Intercontinental States. All right, cruiserweights was the co-main event. 10-0 Robert Hall Jr. against Demar Ortiz, who was 11-0-2. That was for a bunch of obscure titles there. And Shane Mosley Jr. is a big story. He beat Omar Bearfield. Big surprise. Shane Mosley came in at 8-1. Omar Bearfield. His last name is perfect for his record. He's 0-13. 0-13. He has a Bearfield of wins.
Wow.
With one draw. 0-13. But there is a guy, Dennis McKinney, on this card. His record is 28-57-1. Tough fight. No surprise Shane Mosley knocked out the 0-13 guy. 0-13. When you ask him what his record is, he goes, 0-13. Alright. And, we also had a big interview. Big interview this week with, earlier today, with Daniel Weichel. And it's only 4 minutes long. We're going to get back into some MMA talk here. So before we do that, I'm just going to play that segment from earlier today. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but I just said, hey, call me on the cell phone. We'll patch him in and do it that way. We'll do it live. And we got a pretty good interview in. And it worked out perfectly when it got cut off because he was kind of saying, see you in Ireland. That's where his fight is. And that's where it kind of got clipped off. We didn't get any more questions in, but it was a good interview. I didn't get it to come up. Daniel Weichel, actually, I did the 6 degrees of separation thing to him, too, because you might remember Susan Singari when we interviewed her. She's a broadcast lady.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
She does a lot of stuff with MMA now. And she's got a big history with some of the big networks and stuff like that. Well, she was, I think, about to interview Daniel when we interviewed her first. So I think we might have given her some ideas. Who knows? But, yeah, it's not a surprise, too, Daniel like a rematch with Mr. Pitbull. It's not one of his toughest fights.
Yeah, he was doing good. I remember until he ran into a punch.
Yes. He had a great effort going, and then what happened, he basically... I mean, we talked about it on the clip, so I won't spoil what I said, but... Patricio does what he does. Okay, come on, clip. Right, we're gonna open this up. Open with Windows. I got a Windows virus, guys, and it's called Too Many Windows Open at Once. That's my self-imposed Windows virus. I can't help it, you know, it's like you got 9 million things going at once, especially when you're trying to cover the news in combat sports lately. I think it's like too many fights, you know, especially when you're trying to do like bowl season, watching all these college football games. Like, come on, like, give me one fight a week. Or with MMA at least, it's like crazy. There's two fights a night and three fights a weekend. The UFC's doing stuff on Friday. Bellator's doing stuff on Friday. It's a lot to keep up with. Especially if you're, you know, keeping up on all the overseas ones, too. Which I don't do a lot of. But, let's see if we get this clip going. While we're waiting for that, Bellator 168 this Saturday in Florence, Italy. Alessio Sicara versus Joey Beltran has one of the best nicknames, I think, in mixed martial arts. The Mexicutioner.
Yeah.
He is 17-13, and Alessio comes in at 18-11. He's been around quite a long time. Co-main event, Philip Linz, 10-1, fighting Kleber Raimundo Silva, who's 12-7. And we didn't do a boxing mismatch of the week, but I guess this one could be the MMA mismatch of the week. We got John Salter coming in at 12-3 against Claudio Anacchiarico. His record is 0-1. They don't even have a sure dog picture for this guy.
Wow.
Poor bastard. 12-3 versus 0-1 in the third fight of the night. They got Goichi Yamauchi, 20 wins, 3 losses, fighting Valeriu Mircea, who is 13-3. And don't let his record fool you, Edward, fighting Emmanuel Palumbi, who is 5-2. That's coming to you from Florence, Italy. You know where that is, Tony? You got relatives there?
I don't know exactly in Italy where it is, but I believe it's northern Italy.
What's the time difference? We'll see. We'll find out. That's on Saturday. I do believe the UFC has a fight on Saturday, too. We'll get to that. Interview I'm trying to get to load up here with Daniel Weichel, that's from the press stuff that they're doing for Bellator 169, which is also another overseas card that they're doing in Dublin, Ireland. And looks like pretty good stuff there. That one, the main event there from Dublin is Muhammad Lawal versus Satoshi Ishii. Mo, King Mo, as he's known, comes in at 19-5. Satoshi Ishii comes in at 14-6-1. And co-main event there is Anthony Taylor, 1-1, and James Gallagher, who is 4-0. But then we've got Daniel Weichel coming in at 37-9, fighting Brian Moore, who's 9-4. Also got Bruna Allen, 2-1, fighting Helen Harper, who's 4-1. Shea Walsh coming in at 14-4, fighting Louise Tosta, who's 9-2-1. But Weichel is pretty dangerous, pretty rangy guy. He was like many mixed martial arts guys when we talked about favorite moves. He kind of deflected the question. Basically said he changes a lot, which you kind of have to do. Anyway, let's see if we can get that to play. What's going on there? Hoping it was something else, I guess. And while we're waiting, might as well go over UFC 206. That's the big one this weekend. Main event there is Max Holloway versus Anthony Pettis. This one's from Toronto, Canada. Max Holloway is a pretty vicious fighter. He's on a tear. He's 16-3. Anthony Pettis has been up and down over the years. He's been on top, had the belt. Comes in at 19-5 and just is a very durable, experienced fighter. Very capable of crazy stuff. But Holloway is, I think, a little bit too smart for his antics. If you know what I mean? If you've watched Anthony fight, the Showtime kick, stuff like that. Yeah, Holloway is going to sniff that out and keep his range and distance and use his lankiness to his advantage, I believe. And this one could be an epic fight. This one could definitely go all 5 rounds. It's not for a title. Usually they do the main event 5 rounds in these affairs. But some other great fights on this beautiful card up there in Toronto. We've also got Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Matt Brown. Cerrone comes in at 31-7. Brown comes in at 20-15. So, crazy, crazy main event and co-main event there, talent-wise. It's very good to see put together that kind of a card.
Yeah, they're doing the best they can. You know, they're doing the best they could after the main event. You know, the original main event was canceled. That's the one that was real looking forward to.
Yes.
With Cormier and Rumble, but not to be.
Not to be. Anyway, co-main event, Donald Cerrone versus Matt Brown. Now, what do you think of that one, Tom?
I got to go with Donald. I think that Matt is starting in that kind of a downside, or that downslide, I think would be the better word. Just his last couple fights, he just hasn't looked himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he's durable, and, you know, he's got that style. He's hard to finish, but we have seen him finished the last couple times. So I've got to go with Cowboy in this one.
All right.
Of course, I guess Dana's a little concerned now about this whole union thing. He said he was, there's another article, I didn't get to you, I don't think. Apparently, Dana said that of all the fighters that started the union, he was most surprised about Cowboy.
Right.
And he said that he was kind of hurt that Cowboy didn't call him and tell him what he was going to do, because one time before a big fight, Cowboy got into a fight out on his boat with someone and hurt the guy pretty bad, so Dana had to get a lawyer real quick. He figured Cowboy owed him one. But Cowboy didn't see it like that, so Dana says, well, okay, you know, he's a big boy.
Crazy.
And, you know, the main event's going to be intriguing, too, to see how Pettis deals with that reach advantage of Holloway.
Yeah. So, we'll definitely keep our eye on that one. We also have Du Ho Choi, 14-1, fighting Cub Swanson, who's 23-7. Tim Kennedy, 18-5, coming in against missing the boat on weight, Calvin Gastelum. Gets hooked up with another fight immediately, 12-2. It's his record. Unbelievable.
Well, we just don't know about that fight. Yeah. We don't know about that till it happens. Okay. I'm going to be watching the weigh-in on that. You know, we'll see how that goes.
So, yeah, obviously that's at a heavier weight than he's used to. But we also have Jordan Mayne, 29-10, fighting Emil Weber-Meek, who's 8-2-1. Nikita Krylov coming in at 21-4, fighting Misha Serkunov, who's 12-2. Olivier Aubin Mercier, 8-2, fighting Drew Dober, who's 17-7. Valerie Letourneau, 8-5, fighting Viviana Pereira, who's 11-0. Mitch Gagnon, 12-3, fighting Matthew Lopez, 8-1. Lando Vanata, 8-1, fighting John McDessie, 14-5. Second fight of the night, Rustam Khabilov. His record is 20-3. Sounds like he should be higher up on the card. Fighting Jason Asego, who is 12-2. So that should be a good one. Zach Makovsky in the first fight of the night comes in at 19-7, fighting Dustin Ortiz, who is 15-6. So that's that there. Let's see if we can get Daniel's interview to play. I know it will. Process here, but Daniel Weichel has a heck of a record, and would have had a 10-fight winning streak if it wasn't for that clash with old Pitbull. But again, now while we're waiting for that, we got one more big UFC card to talk about. This one's from Albany, New York, tomorrow night. Not wasting any time with New York. Times Union Center tomorrow night. We've got Derek Lewis. He's a heavyweight fighting Shamil Abdurakhimov. Derek is 16-4. Abdurakhimov is 17-3. And whenever I think about Derek Lewis, I think about when he was just basically heckling poor Kimbo after his last fight, Kimbo's last fight there in Bellator, and he was how Kimbo was wheezing backstage, and Derek Lewis was filming it and put out a video of him taunting Kimbo from a distance. rest in peace, Kimbo there, but Sun didn't do too well the other night. Anyway, co-main event here is Francis Ngannou, 8-1, fighting Anthony Hamilton, who's 15-5. We got Corey Anderson, 8-2. Fighting Sean O'Connell, 17-8. Gian Vellante, 14-7. Fighting Saperbek Safarov, who's 8-0. Justine Kish, 5-0, fighting Ashley Yoder, who's 5-1. Randy Brown, fighting Brian Camozzi, who's 7-2. Gerald Mearshart, who is 24-8, fighting Joe Gigliotti, who is 7-1. We got Andrew Sanchez, 8-2, fighting Trevor Smith, who's 14-6. Thiago Dos Santos e Silva, he is 25-2, 20 wins, 5 losses, 2 draws. He's fighting Shane Burgos, who's 7-0. And third fight of the night, Frankie Perez, 10-2, fighting Mark Diachiese, who is 10-0, undefeated. And we got Keith Barish, 5-0, fighting Ryan Janes, 8-1 in the second fight of the night. First fight is J.J. Aldrich, 4-1, fighting Juliana Lima, who is 8-3. All right. Let's see what's going on with this. Opening. Open the file, computer. And it's interesting, the as I talked about, the there was some controversy with the fighters unions coming out in recent months, especially the controversy to me. I mean, obviously these guys are coming in and putting new people in, but what Dana White doesn't tell you is, you know, he's just kind of getting paid to do a position now, and him and the Fertittas are completely locked out of any decision making. So it makes you wonder why now, and you know, were they really afraid when the Fertittas were there? And it's stuff like they took care of these people, that coming out, Dana White admitting, hey, you know, we took care of Chuck Liddell and drawing a blank there, Matt Hughes. You know, we gave him executive positions, and they probably didn't do a whole lot of stuff. So.
Yeah, but that's my feeling. What are these positions?
Nowadays, that's sort of being taken over by, like, the networks. Now all these guys from the UFC are doing their second job with the networks rather than the UFC. But the thing now is all those guys are actively fighting. They're all actively fighting and doing that. So it's just very interesting to see.
You know, speaking of the networks now, there's some rumors here about Rogan and Goldberg. And don't know how that's going to shake out, but let's hope that they don't turn it over to these regular mainstream network announcers. You know, see how it goes. I kind of miss Rogan.
Well, he has always said, too, that he would like to part ways with the company if it's not owned by the Fertittas. That makes you wonder. And a lot of the guys who broke ranks with the UFC and went to this Fighters Association are of the opponent talent agency to WME that now owns the UFC. So that was kind of an interesting angle to that one. Discuss that too much, but good stuff going on there. Lots of controversy. And the big thing with the union that was actually backed by people with experience in other unions and with other sports agencies and representing people in other sports, their thing was they actually released the list of names of people that were going to be involved in their fighters boards, and that was interesting to me that that was not a good move for a lot of these fighters, and it makes you wonder if there was any backlash, and obviously that's why they were concerned about their names being released. You know, is there going to be any backlash because I gave them my name as somebody who was considering working with them? Really makes you wonder there. We also have to talk about last week's Ultimate Fighter 24 finale. Did mention Demetrius Johnson won over Tim Elliott. Demetrius has lost two fights in his career, one draw. He's got 25 wins now. He's aiming for Anderson Silva's consecutive title defense record. That was another unanimous decision for him. It was more entertaining than it usually is. Elliott obviously has a unique style. It was very grapple heavy. He's got a lot of heart, didn't quit. But, it's just weathered the storm, early storm, and the energy of Elliott, Demetrius did, and does what he does, did what he did. Joseph Benavidez obviously got the split decision over Henry Cejudo. And what did you think about the stoppage in the Jake Ellenberger fight there, Tom?
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, his toe gets caught in the cage. Are you kidding me? That's WWE stuff right there. I mean, I'm not saying it was done on purpose. It was a freak accident, but what was fascinating is how they had to have a big discussion about it.
Right.
Did you see the card?
I did, yes.
Did you notice that it was like they were trying to figure out a big quadratic equation or something? You know, they're getting all around and discussing theoretical physics. I mean, that went on for a few minutes, trying to figure out, well, what do we do?
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Herb Dean.
Now, in the overall scheme of things, I don't feel that it would have mattered because we didn't see a lot new out of Jake.
Right.
Things just weren't going his way. He came along and just seemed like a ball of fire in his early days, but he just hasn't been able to get it going. So I don't think it would have mattered, but it was I just never seen anything quite like that before. Tony, for your benefit, in case you didn't see it, what happened was Ellenberg shot in and was rolled into the cage, and his toe got caught.
Oh.
And he couldn't get his toe out. This is like a, I don't know how you describe
freak
it.
Accident.
Like a Three Stooges scene or something. So, in the meantime, Masvidal is still punching him. I mean, he did, you know, until the referee says stop, you keep going. And the referee really was just caught by surprise. We'd never seen anything like this in over 20 years of the UFC. That had never happened before. A toe stuck in the cage.
Hmm.
So they called it, and initially they ruled that I believe the initial ruling was what it ended up to be, right, Rich? It was a TKO win.
Right.
I think initially, but then they started thinking, well, wait a minute, should we have just called timeout and let him get his toe out of the cage?
Hmm.
Oh God, what next?
Well, that's basically what Jake wants. He wants it declared a no contest. He thinks it should have been declared a no contest because of that situation. But because they stopped
Jake,
the action.
You know, and Jake had really shown some decent punching power in the past. And boy, he couldn't seem to get Poirier's attention at all.
No.
Landed a few shots on him, and Masvidal was just smiling at him coming in.
Interesting. Anyway.
Do you have any comments about the Ryan Hall Gray Maynard fight?
That was an interesting one. You know, a lot of people would kind of compare Ryan Hall's style to a little bit like without the head shaking. Caveman. The Carpenter, Clay Guida. It's just a lot of rolling and grabbing for legs and stuff, and a lot of jiu-jitsu that Gray just didn't want to stay anywhere close to and get involved with. And Ryan actually also learned to defend himself from that position as well, from strikes and stuff, and what to look out for, and actually did a decent job controlling the cage when he was on his feet. So more power to him getting that unanimous decision, but it just shows you what kind of unique styles certain people can develop.
Yeah, he, I think he did more, well, I don't think Gray did much damage at all on the feet, but I would agree with Brian Standby. The third round, Gray had, he would have almost had to risk it on the ground. And I don't know if his corner, because the first round, you could see the first round going to Gray, but then Hall was just dominating on the feet in the second round. And in the third round, I don't know if Gray's corner just said, don't risk it on the ground. But they turned around and said how Gray had devoted his whole training camp to avoiding submissions, and then he didn't want to go to the ground. It was a frustrating fight for me. You know, I still, I've met Gray, and, you know, we've talked some. I really like the guy, but it was just a maddeningly frustrating style that Hall has. But, you know, the way to beat a style like that is to go out and beat it.
Yep.
Figure it out and beat him. So we'll see what his future is. But a lot of booze after that fight. Did you notice that? A lot of booze.
Yeah, they did not like that style, the fans.
Well, it just comes down to this. Smoking Joe Frazier showed us how to beat Muhammad Ali style. Good old left hook there.
Yep.
And that's if you don't like someone's style, get out there and beat him. And that's what that comes down to. I mean, he's not the most exciting guy in the world, but he's really got a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for opponents, especially at that weight division, because he's probably going to have a big height and reach advantage. And he's got that one, I don't know what his hands were like. I didn't see much boxing from him, but that he's got that freaky sidekick that can do some damage. I mean, he landed some head kicks on Gray.
Right.
So he's going to be a load.
Yes, sirree. We also had some other fights here. Oh, I got the Marine Corps out again. Jared Cannonier beat Ian Kutalaba by unanimous decision. Sarah McMahon beat Alexis Davis with an arm triangle choke. 252 into the second round. That was a pretty interesting fight to watch. Brandon Moreno beat Ryan Benoit by split decision. Also, we talked about Ryan Hall. He beat Gray by unanimous decision, by the way. Rob Font got a win over Matt Schnell with a knee and punches TKO, 347 into the first round. Dong Hyun Kim beats Brendan O'Reilly by unanimous decision. We also had Jamie Moyle beat Kaylin Curran by unanimous decision. Anthony Smith, in the second fight of the night, beat Elvis Mutipic by TKO, elbow and punches, second round, 327 into that one. And the first fight of the night ended with a unanimous decision win for Devin Clark over Josh Stansbury. And that about does it for our recaps. All right, folks, next we're going to have an interview with Daniel Weichel, who is fighting in Dublin, Ireland on the 16th. And we're going to have about a 4-minute interview with him, and that's the end of the show, folks. So thanks for stopping by.
Good, thank you. How are you?
Great. So you looking forward to this fight coming up?
Absolutely. I'm really happy to fight one more time this year. And I'm also really, really happy to fight back in Europe.
Awesome. Now, I actually interviewed Susan Singari, I believe it was right before she interviewed you, not too long ago.
Yeah.
So, that's 6 degrees of separation there between us, but... so, how did you get into fighting in the first place? You've had a long career, obviously. When did it start, and how did you first get the inkling to fight?
I was always fascinated by... mixed martial arts movies with Jean-Claude Van Damme or Bruce Lee, and that really got me to begin with martial arts like Jiu-Jitsu. I started out of Jiu-Jitsu in Germany.
Awesome. And you know, when did you first start formally training?
Sorry, what was that?
When did you first start formally training for it?
With 13 years, I started with the first time I put a step on the mat.
Awesome. And who is the toughest guy you'd say you've ever fought?
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough one to call, and I think I would say that that fight with Pitbull was very tough for me. So, yeah, that one. I would call that one.
Right, and a lot of people would say you were winning that, and he just kind of came out of nowhere, like he does.
Yeah.
Is that one you're hoping to avenge someday?
Sorry?
Is that one you're hoping to avenge someday and get it back, get another opportunity at him?
I'm pretty sure I will get my revenge one day. He's one of the top guys in the division, and I think sooner or later we will meet again.
Awesome. Yeah. That sounds like a threat. is there anybody else out there other than him you'd like to fight in the near future at some point?
Yeah, there is. Daniel Strauss, I would love to fight whenever he's ready.
Awesome. And what's your ultimate goal here with Bellator and the sport of mixed martial arts?
Yeah, my goal is to become Germany's first featherweight champion and to build my legacy here at Bellator and to defend the belt as many times as possible.
Awesome. And do you have a favorite punch or submission or anything like that that you really like more than anything else that you always look for in a fight?
Changes a lot. Like, at one point I have like my right hand connecting good, and it's like it's my favorite technique just for it changed like to submission. So I don't have a all-time favorite punch or submission.
I always say it's my jab, but you know, it's a lot of people are different. Some like that straight right does it for some people. Now, as far as Bellator itself, what's it like as a company to work for Bellator? How have they treated you overall, and what's the experience been like working for them?
How they treat me, and I always feel that they take really good care of me, and I'm already really looking forward to see all the guys again in Ireland.